What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, investing legend Paul Tudor Jones on the Just 100. Which companies are doing the most good while they're doing well?
You can't have a value proposition for investors and shareholders in the long run unless you're taking care of and providing a value proposition for the other stakeholders, employees, customers, communities, the planet.
And one company on that list, Accenture, CEO Julie Sweet says it's more than just being woke.
We've added $140 billion in market cap since the pandemic began while meeting our commitment to get to 50-50 gender parity by 2025.
But first, the search for COVID tests is still on. Plus, Joe, Becky, and Andrew on a new national champ in college football. And a new year's crop of new infections.
We may need another alphabet eventually.
It's Tuesday, January 11th, 2022. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin and Joe Kernan, who is just back from the home of the new national champions. That's right. Congratulations to the Georgia Dogs. Welcome back, Joe. Good
one
to see you.
More day. Should stay.
I couldn't believe you came back the day before that happened. Poor planning on your part.
Anyone notice that Herschel is now back in the spotlight? And that was it's all weird, yep. Isn't it? The way it's
The last time they won, was it 42 years ago? 1980?
You're asking me because you think I was that? No, yes, it was. It was 1980. And I think I was, I'd been at Merrill Lynch for like 80 years. I think 1980 was when I graduated from grad school. How's Andrew doing? What's going on, Sorkin? I didn't see you the week before I left, I don't think, either. You look bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I haven't seen you for 2 weeks, is that right?
Is that more like three.
Two long weeks. Two long
time
weeks,
flies.
But the heart grows.
Time flies, right?
Welcome back, my friend. Welcome back. Happy New Year.
You guys didn't settle anything while I was gone with COVID? Or what, are we looking for a peak this month?
Peaked, Joe, in the New York area or New York City, at least. I think we're getting very close. You've actually started to see the numbers go down. It sort of was up at 18-19%. They've started in Manhattan specific, have started to fall. The question is whether it holds. But, if we can get past the next 2 weeks, I think there's still another probably six weeks nationwide, though, before you're going to see the full peak off, right? The U.S. reported now more than 1.3 million new cases yesterday, breaking the previous record of just over a million from a week ago. That was on January 3rd, bringing the 7-day average to a new high of 741,000 new infections per day. Joe?
That's significant. That is a significant number, but have we decided Omicron is definitely not Delta? What's a Delta-cron? Is that real or is that a mistake? I guess we'll find out. But we should get used to we may need another alphabet eventually. Or maybe we have to go back and use she or XI. No, let's not do that. Try getting a test.
That's just it.
Where's that half a billion?
I will give everybody a hint for the early viewers of Squawk Box. Here's your little tip of the morning. Walmart.com has Buy Next Now test right now. I just bought some at 5:58. Oh, they're gone already. Somebody said in my ear. Literally got it at 5:58. You got to check really early every day to try and get a hold of these tests. But keep checking back. The Biden administration says that private insurers are soon going to have to cover the cost of 8 at-home COVID tests per member per month. People will be able to get their tests at the health plan's preferred pharmacies and other retailers with no out-of-pocket costs, or they can buy the test elsewhere and then file claims for reimbursement. The new policy will not apply retroactively to tests that people have already purchased. Still, for many Americans, paying for tests hasn't been a problem lately. It's been that run on supply of at-home tests that coincided with the Omicron wave. Manufacturers are still racing to try and restock the shelves. And guys, the other thing you realize is if you've got a family, four, five, six people, like in our house, there's six of us, it's really tricky. If somebody winds up with a positive test or somebody gets exposed, you need a lot of these tests to get through to figure out when and if it's moving through the household.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not okay to have a test per person or two tests per people.
And the first test doesn't mean anything if the other person just got it, because then you got to test tomorrow. Then you never know, right?
Yeah.
But the real question is, why did the Biden administration do this a long time ago? Should the insurance companies be the ones that have to pay for this? Should the government be subsidizing these tests so that they're actually cheap and available? You know, you go online right now and you look at the experiences that people are having across the country, both in terms of trying to find the test, but then a number of people who've even attempted to try to get reimbursed, you can't until after January 15th. So everybody who's either stocked up or actually tried to do this responsibly effectively gets disincentivized. I mean, the whole system's broken.
You know people that know people that were unable to get reimbursed, Andrew? Is that what you're saying? Or do you have any personal experience?
I've not.
Oh, you haven't. Oh, okay.
No, there's been. No. If you go online, there are articles, lots of articles about people who have attempted to try to get the reimbursement.
Right.
People who've taken to Twitter to explain their situation and what they've tried to do and how it appears that the insurance companies won't do it. In part, I think because perhaps the date had not officially been set. I thought the date was originally supposed to be January 1st. Now it appears there's this January 15th. Is there a difference between how many tests you're supposed to be able to get based on the certain dates? None of the insurance companies seem to know the answer. There are insurance people who are out online talking about it. No, there's a whole sort of complex around this right now.
Well, it'd be let's worry about supply for get them out there where you can get them, and then we'll worry about reimbursement, I guess, because it's tough
and
to get them.
I know people who are still waiting for PCR test results 5 days later, 6 days later, 7 days later. It's completely useless if you can't get a test back within 48 hours.
Georgia Bulldogs are college football's national champions, finally getting that Saban monkey off their back. I mean, it's tough. Tough to beat Nick Saban. Their first title in 41 years, quarterback Stetson Bennett, a former walk-on through two touchdown passes to lead Georgia to a 33-18 win over Alabama. And then there was a late pick six. Georgia leaned on its defense, which should have been there the previous game, the SEC championship, when those guys got so tired. They were on the field the entire game, and that didn't happen last night. I saw the first half, and Georgia actually was able to stop Alabama on some of those third down plays and get off the field. Because, beating Alabama, that's tough. Alabama's Heisman-winning quarterback threw an interception late in the game. That sealed the deal for the Bulldogs. I can tell you that that's 42 years. A lot of people were watching closely and really hoping this time would happen. And Georgia, did you guys know that Georgia was favored? I was kind of surprised, and I took Georgia, and I only had to give two and a half points. And, I couldn't bet. I was fine, but I couldn't bet for 10 days, okay? But I was 11 days, but I was fine. I made some bets
not that
before
you were counting
I went.
The hours.
And then I got
that's why you came home.
And then I got
but
back.
Now you can do
I
it
had the
sitting
over,
in the chair.
And I had the
back
over.
In New York.
53, mm-hmm. So I didn't win because 33 plus 18 is 51 if you do the math. But I had the
so
right
close.
Team. And it's
so
a moral win. It's a moral victory. So I lost $6. Georgia, that's big for people down
I'm
there.
Surprised they were, I'm surprised they were up in the, only because the only game that
favored.
They lost all year was to Alabama earlier, right?
Yeah, and Alabama had some uneven, they lost to Texas A&M, and they just barely beat, who was it, Mississippi State, one of them.
Georgia
Auburn,
just beat Michigan.
Maybe? Auburn, yeah. Back and forth with Auburn. Yeah, exactly. Great. That should have been maybe the harbinger, the way, Michigan just manhandled Ohio State and then, Georgia beating Michigan like that. Anyway, great game. One of the great games. I wish I would have stayed up for but I couldn't.
Because you're here with us now, which is important too, and we're glad you're here.
I am.
Exactly.
Yes.
But we do tip our hats to the dogs.
Next, on Squawk Pod, a new generation of investors values companies that focus on more than the bottom line. Paul Tudor Jones joins us on the Just 100, an annual ranking of the largest public companies and how they deliver, not just to shareholders, but to workers, customers, communities, and the environment.
Being just and being in line with Americans' views on what is just is great business.
And coming in at number 17 on that list, Accenture CEO Julie Sweet.
Last quarter, we announced we hired 50,000 people. And we believe that that is very much related to the fact that people want to go to companies that create value, right? Who have the right pay equity, who pay the right salaries, but also lead with values, who have sustainability.
What it means to be successful in America, right after this.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. And today, what makes a company just? Just Capital is an ESG investing research specialist co-founded by hedge funder and billionaire Paul Tudor Jones. And it's out with a new list of the most just publicly traded companies in America on environmental, social, and governance metrics. Members of the Just 100 are ranked based on issues like paying a fair wage, creating jobs, cultivating a diverse and inclusive workplace, and sustainability. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
We have some news just out. Just Capital is out with its rankings of the most just companies in America. Of the nearly 1,000 companies measured, Alphabet, formerly called Google, as we all know, is at the top of the list, this for the first time, followed by Intel, Microsoft, then Salesforce, Bank of America, PayPal, Apple, NVIDIA, Verizon, and Cisco, rounding out the top 10. Now, compared to their peers in the Russell 1000, companies in the Just 100, on average, create nearly 8 times more jobs, are about 7 times more likely to disclose workforce demographic data by race and ethnicity, as well as pay gap information and analysis, and they use nearly 20% more renewable energy. All of this appears to be paying off. Companies in the Just 100 had a 4.4% higher return on equity and paid 19.2% more in dividends. And I know we've talked a lot about ESG over the years, but Just Capital, which was, of course, founded by Paul Tudor Jones, is not really just a measure of ESG per se. What they do every year, interestingly, is they go out and do a poll of Americans across the country about what's important to them in terms of how they think about things. And then they measure it and they weigh it. And that's how they come up with the Just 100 list. We're going to talk a lot more about that list and what goes into it and what's come from it. We're going to speak with Accenture CEO Julie Sweet, ranked number 17 on that Just 100 list, alongside legendary trader and, yep, Just Capital's co-founder Paul Tudor Jones will be with us. And to check out the full list, you can check it out right now, cnbc.com/just100 for more. It's a fascinating list. And, you know, Paul Tudor Jones came on years ago and said it was going to outperform, and it has. Paul, I want to start with you. Good morning. Speak to what this Just list is for those who don't know about it, and how you decide on the rankings.
Well, the Just list takes the 954 largest companies in America, and we rank them according to what the American public thinks is the most important issues with regard to what they want to see corporations do. So we poll the American public every year. We've been doing it every year since 2014. We take the results of those polls, and then we take those metrics, of which there are 20, and we rank every single company against those metrics. And what we're trying to do is to create a competition for goodness and let the free market, whether it's customers, employees, communities, manage it, whatever, providing them the information so that they can, again, probably corroborate what those companies are doing and move towards those companies that are more in sync with the values and the thoughts and the ideas of the American public. By the way, forgive me for not on the front end saying hello to you. It's such a great way to start the year, seeing you as well. And I feel a little needy, if I'm being honest, that I wasn't part of the Joe and Becky and Andrew Grand reunion.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the comments, and happy new year to you. Before I get to Julie, one quick question. Alphabet's at the top of this list this year. What were the biggest shifts in terms of what you saw, what the American public, when you polled them, were thinking about? And how do you think that will reflect itself in terms of returns? Because one of the things that has been interesting is you've made the argument that the more just a company is, the better the returns ultimately will be.
Well, the data's been clear on that ever since we started polling. There's every single company that is in the Just 100, and particularly the top 20, of which Julie's company is one, they are really good on the most important metrics, which are generally pocketbook issues and worker related. The number one component is pay a fair and living wage. So all these companies pay extraordinarily well relative to the rest of corporate America. So by definition, when you see these companies in the top 10, they've got workforces that are taken care of by far and away on a variety of fronts relative to the rest of corporate America. The most important thing, though, is that being just and being in line with Americans' views on what is just is great business. It's fantastic business. These companies, on average, in the Just 100, earn 4.5% more than the rest of corporate America. They have so many things that they do, such as they give 19 times more to local communities. They emit 26 million tons less carbon than the rest of the list. They provide pay gap disclosure much more so than the rest of the list. And I think most importantly, their stock price generally outperforms the S&P 500 or the Russell 1000. And they also pay 20% more in dividends. So there's economic and financial things that they do better on. And there are also social issues that set them apart in a way that make them the most valued companies in America. You can't have a value proposition for investors and shareholders in the long run unless you're taking care of and providing a value proposition for the other stakeholders, employees, customers, communities, the planet.
Paul, that's a nice segue for me to bring Julie into the conversation. Julie, you're number 17 on this list. You have a workforce of about 670, it's almost 675,000 employees, and one of the most diverse boards, I should mention, in corporate America. I'm hoping you can maybe speak to those in the audience this morning, business leaders and others, who are skeptical about some of the priorities that may be listed here, where people say, "Ugh, is this just everybody trying to be woke, or is this marketing, or is this packaging?" Because I think you've been thinking about this for a very, very long time.
Thanks, Andrew. It is great to be part of your reunion and great to be here with Paul, who I just want to recognize as an early leader in spotlighting these issues. I think Paul got it exactly right. This is great for business, not just good, but great for business and for our people. Let's just take the tight labor market. Last quarter, we announced we hired 50,000 people in a single quarter. We are a talent magnet. And we believe that that is very much related to the fact that people want to go to companies that create value, right? Who have the right pay equity, who pay the right salaries, but also lead with values, who have sustainability. So we've added $140 billion in market cap since the pandemic began, while meeting our commitment to get to 50-50 gender parity by 2025. We're at 46%. You know, to be net zero by 2025, we're at 50% renewable energy in all our facilities. Our core business strategy is to not only do this for our stakeholders, but also for our clients. And we believe that our results are intertwined completely with our commitment to being a just company. And that's why these types of metrics are so important. And I think it's exciting to continue to see that competition for goodness.
Part of what the Just 100 list seems to be suggesting is not just that the numbers should be good, but just even a basic disclosure is important. That's something that I think you've taken to heart. You've announced this 360-degree value reporting experience. And I also think it's something that you've been promoting to your clients as well. Again, to the skeptics out there who are running businesses who say, you know what, why do I want to disclose this stuff? First of all, it's just more paperwork. Second of all, it may not put me always in the best light. What do you tell them?
Transparency builds trust. Right. And we see that absolutely every day. I know when we first first publicly disclosed our inclusion diversity metrics back in 2015, we were the first company in our industry to do so. Our numbers weren't great, and yet our recruiting improved in all of our diverse categories because transparency builds trust. We just launched our 360-degree value experience, which you noted. And what we did there was we said we are going to report against every major ESG framework. We took 15 months to get all the data because we believe whether it's investors, clients, or people, that kind of transparency makes people want to partner with you and join you.
Hey, Paul, I just want to speak to the returns issue and also just operating a business. I remember having a conversation with Stephen Schwartzman from Blackstone. This was right after the Business Roundtable chose to shift what they decided was going to be the purpose of a business, not just about profits, but to also include so many other constituent parts, if you will. And he said that he wasn't willing to sign on to that statement, not because he didn't believe in all those other constituencies, but because he thought that you needed to actually focus on only one thing, that if you could actually nail the profit piece, you'd be able to nail the other pieces. What do you make of that?
Well, I think history's proven that that's wrong. It's economically wrong. A great example, the problem with what Milton Friedman said, that the only business purpose for a company is to generate a profit, is that if that's your only motive, it creates the ability to be amoral in your decisions. And a classic example of that would be Purdue Pharma, right? Their only business purpose was to make a profit. And then the consequence of that was an opioid crisis that killed 400,000 Americans. So you cannot distinguish between a business purpose without bringing in ethics and morality and the social consequences of your actions. So yes, making a profit, actually, you can't even say that making a profit is economically the greatest way to create a production system, because again, we lost 400,000 workers in that opioid crisis. We lost 4.5 million jobs between 2003 and 2011 to China because of the fact that the only purpose at that point in time was to make a profit. And if I look at the second most important component of what the American public says for a company's justice is to create American jobs in this country. So again, I would argue that there's a variety of both social and economic things that have proven what Milton Friedman said is patently false.
We've been talking all morning, and I don't know if you were watching the program earlier. We were talking about Intel and this debate over Intel and what's happening in China. They do obviously a lot of business in China. They've been effectively muzzled by the Chinese government. You had Senator Rubio this morning or yesterday criticizing them for effectively taking some of their language back, which had been critical, or at least acknowledged why they had made some of the comments they made. How do you think that companies in this day and age are supposed to deal with these moral and ethical dilemmas that may actually have bottom line impact?
Yeah, I don't think that everything's black or white. Clearly, there are going to be shades of gray. Clearly, there are going to be benefit cost trade-offs. The most important thing that I think the just dialogue does is it brings in those shades of gray, right? It brings in the idea that a business purpose is not just to make a profit. If we did that, clearly it has huge social consequences that are not great for our society. Look at where we are today. We had the greatest income and wealth disparity in the history of this country. And with that comes the greatest divisiveness that we've had. Capitalism under threat. A third of millennials think that communism is better than capitalism. So clearly, we have to do something differently than we've done. And I think we've seen great strides over the past few years towards a much more just economy. And we've seen corporations do, I think, a much better job of trying to take in the social consequences of their actions and what they do. I think the best thing that we can see is we've seen wage growth go up, right? The number one issue for Americans with regard to companies is pay a fair and living wage. And last year you saw an explosion in wage growth, which is a good thing, particularly since profit margins over that same time frame have went from 6 to 12%. So yes, letting workers share more in corporate revenue is a good thing, and it's good for business also.
Hey, Paul, just want to pivot, and with Julie as well, want to pivot to the economy right now. The last time we talked, we were having conversations about what the Fed was going to do next. Obviously, Jay Powell on the Hill. What do you think the Fed is going to do next? And how are you thinking about the outlook in terms of equities and bonds for the year?
Well, I think Jay Powell is going to play catch up. The last time that we had an unemployment rate 3.9%, Fed funds were 1.75% on the way to 2.5%. And 10-year rates were 3% versus where they are right now. So he's going to play catch up. And he's got a lot of catching up to do. And I think that's why you're seeing them talk about quantitative tightening, because I don't think he can catch up fast enough to try to deal with the inflation problem that he has right now. I kind of feel with regard to the markets, it's a bit like, remember in Animal House, where right before the scene with the death mobile, one of the guys, they're all sitting around, and the guy goes, it's over, men. Wormer just dropped the big one. And I think that's kind of where we are right now with Fed policy. We're getting ready to see a major shift, and it's going to have a lot of consequences for a variety of asset prices.
So what are you doing about it, though? I mean, would you be in equities right now? You and I have talked about crypto. You caught it around 10,000. It's now Bitcoin, that is at something like 40,000. What do you do?
Well, I think a lot of it, again, you have to watch what the central bank does. Clearly, all the inflation trades of the pandemic era are going to be challenged right now. If you just think about where we were again the last time the unemployment rate was here, the PE on the NASDAQ was around 26 or 27. It's 38 today. So assuming fast forward and we're back at 2% on Fed funds and 2.5 or 3 on 10-year rates, what's the multiple on the NASDAQ going to be? Is it going to still be 38 on a trailing basis, or is it going to be back at 26 or 27? And if so, obviously that has huge consequences.
Well, what do you think? What do you think it's going to be?
I don't know what it's going to be. I know that I think it's going to be tough sledding for the inflation trades of the pandemic going forward. So the things that performed the best since March of 2020 are going to probably perform the worst as we go through this tightening cycle. But on a relative basis, I don't know that whether that means they go down or up. I think they're clearly going to be challenged, right? when we, if you could just fast forward 2 years and we're at 2% on rates, again, you have to think about what are the price of assets that today are dealing with, you know, zero free money while they're still adding to balance sheet. I mean, it's going to be a different story 18, 24 months out.
Hey, Julie, what are you seeing? We just spoke with Jamie Dimon yesterday on this network.
If we're lucky, they can engineer a slowdown and you'll see inflation coming down. You know, a lot of people project inflation to be 2.3% at the end of this year. I don't. I think it's going to be higher. But, you know, if we're lucky, the Fed will slow things down and we'll have what they call a soft landing.
He seemed remarkably bullish about the rest of the year. You have your tentacles into so many businesses around the globe.
I know it's a great question because we're all watching the latest round of volatility. And what I would tell you is that the leading companies around the globe are head first going straight for continued compressed transformation, right? They are looking at all of this uncertainty and saying, we're going to be in control. They're doing digital transformation. And to connect to our earlier conversation, they're embedding sustainability in that transformation because they know that's the path to profitable growth. Our research shows that the winners of tomorrow are those who are going to do the digital transformation and sustainability. So you see companies like Shiseido, global beauty company, bold ambition in skincare, and they're investing to upskill their people, put sustainability in their products, and enhance inclusion and diversity. Best Buy, digital leader today. They announced 1,000 new jobs in the US and committed to 30% diversity. I can go on and on because the leading companies, the ones that you want to make the bets on, are full steam ahead on compressed transformation with sustainability embedded.
Hey, Paul, it's good to see you. And I, you know, just looking at your career in terms of, you know, so many things that you've done. And I'm just thinking, because I respect what you think about commodities so much, I'm just wondering whether you think that we're at a point here where we could see something ugly in the next 5 years, and whether for financial assets you would just maybe downgrade the overall return because of what seems to be an inflection point or a second derivative that we've switched with the Fed. And I guess what I'm saying is, do supply chain issues, if they abate, do commodities come back under control, or with the Fed's balance sheet where it is right now, can they not get out without some pain in the next 5 years? If we cross the Rubicon on how bad we may have messed things up monetary-wise?
It's a really good question. I mean, here's one way to frame it. Commodities relative to financial assets are so incredibly undervalued. And one would think on a relative basis as we go through this tightening that commodities would outperform financial assets by a wide margin. Another way to think of it is the stock market relative to GDP in the United States is about 215%. The stock market relative to GDP for the rest of the world is 54%. So we value equities in the United States almost four times more than the rest of the world values their equities relative to their GDP. Now, there's a critical reason for that. And the reason for that is that in the US, we have a contest of ideas, both in our political system, and we're seeing that in spades right now, but in our capitalist system also. And that contest of ideas, compare and contrast that to China, where effectively you have one man now, Xi Jinping, dictating all policy. It's extraordinarily, for me, it's the great leap backward for that country, because they don't have that contest of ideas. When you've got one person at the top where everyone has to subjugate their thinking to that person. So again, US equities are really extraordinarily valued relative to GDP because of the fact that we have that dynamism. Capitalism and democracy go hand in hand, and that dynamism is one reason why if you were going to make a bet on an economy for the future, clearly you'd bet it here in the United States rather than any other country in the world. Having said all of that, four times valuation relative to the rest of the world, it's extraordinary, right? And yes, the real trick here will be, can the Fed unwind what by many appearances are a financial bubble without there being huge negative economic consequences? And we'll watch and see. It'll be interesting to see. I'm nervous because we're at such lofty heights.
Paul, we have to leave the conversation there. I want to thank Julie. Congratulations for being among the just companies. Paul, thank you for bringing us this list this morning. It's great to see both of you. Hope to see you all in person very, very soon.
Squawk Pod. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
How do you land your dream job? It starts by acing the interview. Learn exactly what hiring managers are looking for with CNBC Make It's new career-boosting online course. Get the limited-time offer. Register now at cnbcmakeit.com/courses.
Stand by, Joe. Up on them, too.
As we hurtle through January somehow, I don't know what happened. Don't blink. And we reflect on so many things that I haven't been able to do any reflecting with you guys because I think this is my first appearance of the new year. So it's just a time where we think about the future, we think about the past, God, after the last couple of years, I wouldn't even venture a guess what we're looking at. But
witch dumpster fire this year?
You know, here we are. It's nice to see on Twitter some people. They like us. They really like us. It's nice. And it takes the edge off some of the other stuff. But it's good we're all here together. One big happy Squawk family. There's just no way that you can escape the world and what goes on in it. And I know this is probably sounds ridiculous, but I'm looking forward to what plays out in both the financial world and everything else that we talk about. So I guess that's my summary for getting back and starting the new year. It's a little late, isn't it? On Larry David, I think, Curb Your Enthusiasm. After the second or third, you can't really say Happy New Year. But I haven't seen you guys, so I don't know.
But it is good to all be together and have everybody here together.
If you want to share your big ideas, 2022 resolutions, or just still good New Year's wishes, find us on Twitter at SquawkCNBC. Thanks for listening to this podcast. As you know, Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. Follow Squawk Pod wherever you listen to podcasts, and we'll meet you back here tomorrow.
Now we are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.